Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Lee Fortson, who is the author of Embrace, Release, Heal, an empowering guide to thinking about and treating cancer. Lee has had her own experience with cancer and went on a journey which we encourage our patients to go on. That is one where they use their guidance. There's a lot of different things out there that a cancer diagnosis will lead you to if you're willing to journey there. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, these intuitive journeys can lead to remarkable recoveries. Leigh, thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate you coming on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, you had a personal experience with cancer. Would you like to start there and give a little bit of your story on how you came to investigate the things that went into the book?
You bet. So I had a very unglamorous experience with cancer. There are no ribbons or runners for anal cancer. I had what we thought was just a really pesky hemorrhoid, but it turns out that it was cancer. I had it for 2 years before we finally decided to biopsy it, and it was cancer. I was diagnosed within about 2 weeks of ferrofossate, and I did the typical protocol of radiation and chemo. The radiation was really, really, really hard because whenever you're dealing with mucous membranes, it does a number on you.
It does.
I thought it was over. I decided it was a mistake. I didn't fit the profile of any kind of cancer, and I just was going to, you know, forget about it and move on. But a year after the first diagnosis, I had a recurrence further up the rectum. I graduated to rectal cancer, which then prompted a pretty radical surgery of my anus, my rectum, and part of my sigmoid colon. And because my skin had been so badly radiated from the radiation, it took 9 months for the wound site to heal. That gave me an opportunity to start looking at the cancer from a different point of view. Obviously, God had not made a mistake because I got it again. I started just kind of looking at, you know, I believe in the mind-body connection. Is there some relationship here? Is there anything that I, you know, did or could do now that either contributed to getting cancer or, you know, could contribute to my getting well? So I spent a lot of time. I had a lot of time where I couldn't work. I couldn't sit. I could only either walk or lay down or be on my knees. And I literally was on my knees, let me tell you. But you know, I really discovered a lot of really interesting stuff, reading books and understanding that maybe, you know, some of the resentments I had that I hadn't really resolved yet, some old grievances were really kind of still in my body, and maybe they were part of why this happened. So I really felt great about the work I did that year, but unfortunately, a year after the second diagnosis and 2 years after the first, they found a tumor that was cancerous that was near the sciatic nerve. And that was the time when they said, look, we can't radiate you anymore. Chemo is questionable, and I wouldn't have done it anyway. And they didn't know what to do and didn't have a whole lot of options. They never said you're going to be dead in 6 months, but the doctor was clearly disturbed and clearly didn't think it was good news and didn't really, you know, extrapolate on that. It was pretty, you know, it was pretty clear, though, in his body language and in the way he presented the information. So that was the point at which I thought, wow, okay, if they don't know what to do for me, then I guess it's up to me. And that set me onto this journey. And I became a raw foodist. I read everything I could on self-healing. I meditated every day. I did creative visualization every day. I did end up doing a radiation called CyberKnife, which is a more refined, sophisticated type of radiation because it doesn't blast everything. It just kind of focuses on the tumor and blasts the tumor. But during this time, I decided that the best thing for me was to hear the stories of other people who had either been told they were going to die or had a really dire prognosis and had made it through. I needed to hear their stories. And so I began to write this book. And the book is full of stories of people who were given very, very bad news and for whom conventional treatments failed, and they found their own way. And the more I got into writing this book, and the more I spoke to doctors, both allopathic and alternative, who were looking for new ways to treat cancer, the more I realized that this kind of thing happened all the time. And, of course, it gave me strength and confidence to believe in my own story. And a year later, I was cancer-free.
Yeah, that's a great indication of what can happen when you follow your guidance. And that's what I noticed reading your story, is that you didn't always know where you were going, but each step of the way you followed your guidance. And certainly meditation and other spiritual practices can help you get closer to your guidance.
Right.
But what we found here is that a cancer diagnosis is a perfect opportunity to learn to access your guidance and then see where it takes you. I wanted to tell you a couple of things that you may not know about anal cancer. I don't know whether you do or not. I've been doing this radio show for over 15 years, talking to authors and doctors and all sorts of people, often about cancer, not always, but it comes up a lot, obviously. So I've interviewed a lot of the people in your book. I've interviewed the doctors and other cancer survivors who have written books. One of the interesting things with anal cancer is there is actually a treatment out there that is patented to treat hemorrhoids. That is an anal probe. It's a heat probe.
And
it's,
oh, really?
If you look on qenergy.com, I think it's either org or com, but an older doctor, trying to think of his name, he wrote a book called Healing with Sound and Light. I've interviewed him many times, but I tried to interview him more recently, and he wasn't doing interviews anymore because I think he's in his 80s. But he developed a heat probe, an anal probe, and a prostate probe. So actually men can use this. The prostate probe's a little bit longer. It's FDA-approved for treatment of hemorrhoids, which is great because, as you can imagine, surgery for hemorrhoids. I'm a surgeon, so I do the surgery. I've done it fairly recently. Surgery for hemorrhoids is not the best thing out there for treatment.
Yeah.
You want to do something before you get to that point. So
yeah.
That it's FDA approved for hemorrhoids. You can probably take it off your cafeteria plan. But in China, the doctor told me that they were using it to treat anal cancer, and cancer
really?
Was just melting away. Yeah. Total
wow.
cures of anal cancer that had not spread. So that's something I think you should know, because I'm sure you get people with anal cancer calling you. And
right.
It's called a heat therapy unit or something like that. But essentially it's a heat anal probe. It's about the
mm-hmm.
size of your little finger. It goes in. The other thing that's just amazing about it is that it boosts the immune system tremendously. That's what I use it for. I had poisoning from silicone implants leaking. And every time I get certain symptoms, I know my immune system's down. One of them is a toothache I get. And it's actually been shown to be an abscess, an apical abscess above a root canal. So what I do is I do that and some increase some of my supplements, and it goes away without antibiotics. So, I use it for my patient population.
And you said qi.org or
I'm trying to think the name of it on there. It's not called anal probe in the box.
Right.
I've got if you go to qi.energy, I think
uh-huh.
that's the name of the website, qi.energy, or just qi.energy, if you Google qi.energy, anal probe or
I'll check it out. I'll find it.
Therapy unit, right. It's basically a 20-minute heat treatment. You have to redo it every 20 minutes. You can adjust the heat. The doctor explained that a lot of the acupoints that control the immune system are in the anus. And, of course, you can't needle it there. I mean, it would be very painful. So this treatment was very successful, and he was told this by the doctors in China that he worked with. This treatment's extremely effective for increasing the immune system.
Do you remember the name of the doc who you interviewed?
Let's see. I can probably.
I know. I can't remember
out.
What I had for breakfast 20 minutes ago.
Yeah,
so.
Really. No, I can probably. I can just look on the internet here, and then the let's see. The other thing I wanted to comment on is that it's a mistake to think that cancer has one level of cause.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a cancer clinic here since 1999 and treated people from all over. And some cancers are purely physical, purely physical.
Mm-hmm.
The person, like Madame Curie, exposed to radiation from handling radium without protection. Some cancers are purely spiritual. I had one patient,
right.
I've told this story before on the air, he ended up dying with esophageal cancer. He kept telling his wife he was going to die. He didn't suffer very much. He took chemotherapy, responded very well, didn't suffer at all, didn't lose his hair, hardly any symptoms, mainly because the supplements we were giving him. But basically, he appeared to me after he died. I was out in California on a vacation, and he appeared to me, and I asked him, you know, was there anything else that we could have done for him? And he said no, and he had a message for his wife. And then when I talked to his wife, she said that his death was karmic. She had been told, and she had verified that his death was karmic, that she had left him in a previous life, and he had vowed to leave her in this life. So, you know, he had no risk factors for esophageal cancer, none whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's everything from spiritual, so you might have to change a soul contract, okay, all the way down to what you might have accidentally got exposed, you know, if you, you know, happened to be around a nuclear power plant that went bad, you see.
And that's why I think it's so important. Yeah, exactly. And that's really what I learned in my book is everybody that I spoke to said that they believed that there was an emotional component in there. The thing is, most of us don't know what caused it. That's why it's so important to just go, okay, let's just kind of consider all possibilities. And mm-hmm. if it isn't emotional, if it isn't spiritual, then if we do the work to clean out the emotional pipes, we're going to have a better quality of life anyway.
And your immune system will come back. And as you say in your book, you need an immune system to get rid of cancer.
Yeah.
That's what forgiveness does.
Yeah, this goes contrary to what we're told, and this goes contrary to what the headlines are in the cancer culture. They say it has nothing to do with immune system, with diet, with all kinds of things that other people like this doctor you're talking about and other really innovative folks like yourself know that there's just so much that goes into the pot that creates cancer. So it's just so important to consider it all.
It really is. And, you know, your chapter on the doctor in Italy who treats cancer with bicarb,
yes.
You know, just changing one thing. I mean, that's why Brenda Cobb, I know Brenda personally, that's why her program works. If you can just change one thing, which is the pH of the body,
uh-huh.
you have a
yeah.
tremendous advantage in treating cancer. Does it heal every
uh-huh.
single cancer? No. But it's effective across the board in most cancers.
Yes.
So, you know, that's one thing, mm-hmm. just controlling one
mm-hmm.
thing, and that's pH. Now, why that works, you know, there's debates, you know, is it the fungal thing? Is it something else? You know, who knows? I mean, there's probably multiple things that pH does with the actual living system of cancer, you know.
This may turn into me interviewing you more than you interviewing me, because I'm so curious about, as a doctor, what are you finding in terms of the climate change, the change of climate in the cancer culture, and oncologists and radiologists, are they coming to understand that this stuff is really legitimate?
The integrative doctors, the ones, you can get your boards now in holistic and integrative medicine. I was one of the founding diplomats on that. And during that time, I met a lot of the leaders in cancer. You know, I've talked to Dr. Gordon, and I wanted to interview Dr. Geffen in your book. In fact, I plan on interviewing him. I haven't interviewed him yet, but I've always had a great deal of respect for him. You know, these are doctors that are actually trained in oncology, and I
uh-huh.
think that they have paved the way for other doctors to understand what's going on. You know, sometimes they are still advocating certain chemotherapy regimes, especially insulin potentiation and that kind of thing. There's all sorts of technical things that you can do that help slow tumor growth down while the patients can catch up with all the other things that help, you know, because, you know, some of the tumors are so aggressive that you have to do something just to slow them down a little bit. And so that's like pancreatic cancer, for example, you know. So I think that the cancer doctors that I respect in the integrative world are paving the way. They're following their intuition as much as their patients are, and trying to get their mind around what cancer is. One area that we do a little bit differently than they may do, because we probably have the ability to do that because we're totally freestanding and don't have to depend on hospitals or other doctors. I have a worldwide practice that comes in irregardless of physician referrals. So, you know, if you're dependent on physician referrals, then you're also dependent on what doctors think of you. So that can be a problem. But we're freestanding, so it doesn't matter. Is exploring the you know, what the interdimensional relationship is with cancer. I work with a lot of shamans who can see the energetic, the fourth dimensional intrusions into the third dimension with cancer, and what happens when you block those portals off. Sometimes the cancers disappear, or at least, you know, go down very quickly. I've seen tumors the size of grapefruits disappear with one intervention like that, that were proven with traditional medicine within 2 weeks.
And
I mean, a tumor the size of a grapefruit totally disappearing.
That's something Dr. Geffen is. I mean, he's a hardcore oncologist. He believes oncology. He believes in chemo. He's a hardcore believer in traditional treatment, but he also has done a lot of traveling and seen a lot of really incredible, miraculous things done. And he's really into the cancer is a multidimensional disease. So he definitely, you know, looks at it differently.
Well, I need to interview him then.
Yeah.
That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing I wanted to tell you that is one of the most interesting things I've found is that there are certain drugs that will block this interdimensional portal, we call it. And they're the anti-schizophrenic drugs, which is interesting, huh? Okay.
Really?
And the other thing is, well, sure. I mean, if you're hearing voices in your head and then all of a sudden you take a drug and you're not, guess why?
Yes.
Interdimensional, it's the inappropriate portal that was opened is now shut off. Well, it's so interesting to me when I was reading these articles that schizophrenics have, like, there's an article about 5,000 schizophrenics that one doctor had, and none of them had cancer. Well, some of them had, like, the beginning of cancer, but once they were put on the antipsychotic drug, it went away. So I think, this is my theory, he thought that schizophrenics didn't get cancer, and he thought it was due to an adrenophobe. I'm not sure that that's true, you know, a chemical produced that was seen at higher levels in schizophrenia. I think it's actually the antipsychotic medicines that may make the tumors go away.
Wow.
And so that's a very interesting theory that, you know, what role does this this fourth dimensional intrusion into the third have to play? And what happens is when an organ is essentially weakened, and you may have heard this theory from Dr. Hammer, and I think he was in Austria. Have you read about his work?
Yeah, he's in my book.
Yeah, Dr. Hammer.
There's a sidebar. I didn't actually interview him, but I did feature a little sidebar about them.
Right.
German New Medicine.
Exactly. Well, his work correlates with this. You know, that it's basically an organ-based decrease in energy that you see first.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't go into the intrusion part, but essentially, when there is a drop in energy in the organ, and that's related to a whole bunch of other things. Like we see a lot of breast cancer. So in breast cancer, it's often if it's the left breast and the person's right-handed, it's often somebody who betrayed them, who was supposed to be protecting them. And then the right breast is someone that they're protecting who gets in danger or who, you know, something happens to that relationship. So you can very, in breast cancer, it's really interesting. You can specifically look at all those energy patterns. But if the energy in the organ drops, then that is when the intrusion can occur.
And then this is also this is all just so exciting because we're really entering into a new age of understanding the holistic experience of health. Yesterday I was in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, which is about an hour away from where I live, working with some people who do what's called neurofeedback. And that, because I'm dealing with some pretty gnarly ramifications from the radiation, and I'm in constant pain, and it's turned into sort of this chronic, really difficult situation. So what they've discovered is that neurofeedback is basically working with your brain waves and retraining your brain waves so that they don't get stuck in a pain pattern or whatever it is that you're dealing with. But they take it a step further, and then they go into this, I don't know if they would call it the fourth dimensional, but they go into a therapeutic thing where they basically take you back to some memory that comes up after they retrain your brain, because inevitably memories do come up, they've learned. And they take you back to that memory. And what they're finding, it's just so interesting, is that, for instance, people with Parkinson's have three specific events, usually with a father, in their childhood. People with chronic fatigue have specific patterns that add up to, you know, that. Fibromyalgia, same story. And so I'm so excited to be working with people who are doing, first of all, the neurofeedback, which in and of itself is pretty cutting edge, but then to be able to, and they can go into other lives and they can go into other dimensions, and it's just too cool for words. I had my first session with them yesterday, and I was blown away by the power of one session.
Yeah, no, that's true. And the similar things can happen in massage therapies like Rolfing. You know, when they're working on a particular part of your body and pressing, then you can have very important things come up that it's very important to work on. I wanted to go back. I found this book on Amazon. It's Healing, it's Dr. Charles McGee, and he's one of the original alternative doctors. And the name of the book is Healing Energies of Heat and Light, A Quantum Leap in Healthcare. And in the book, he talks about his invention of the, that we were talking about.
He an American?
Yeah. He's American, and it works for prostate, even benign prostatic hypertrophy symptoms or just regular prostate. And remember when we were China opened up in the 70s? That's when he went over and got a lot of information about what was happening with the heat in that, along those meridians.
Right.
So that
this is great.
There's a lot
great
of
information to have
based on the Chinese. The Chinese medicine, and here it is. It's the prototype of, I'm trying to do it on the computer, thermotherapy. It's called Rogers Anal Heater Thermotherapy Device.
Okay.
And there was, the FDA cleared the device in 82, and then there's another one out now that has a
But how many doctors do you suppose know about it?
Oh, very few. I was guided to it. You know, I was guided to it because I needed it for my immune system. You know, I have a very hectic schedule as a surgeon. I mean, I can spend 14 to 17 hours a day in surgery, which is not at all stressful, as you know. So,
it's not good.
It's kind of stressful.
No.
I love. But but it, physically, it's very taxing. So I have to have these things that help me.
Yeah.
On occasion, I mean, I probably only use it once every 3 months, but. We also use the light therapies. You know, the Avalon light therapies are really good for putting photons directly back in. And I was listening to some stuff on how every cancer they've looked at has a loss of photons in the DNA. So that's something that, if you put light photons back in, things that are cancerous and precancerous might go back to, you know, not being so.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? So there's all sorts of really wonderful things on
there. There's so much great stuff out there, and I just got get emails quite frequently from people who have read the book, and I get a lot of really enraged emails from people. It's like, why isn't this information out there? Why isn't our world more open to these alternative treatments? I got an email yesterday from a guy who was saying he thinks that the lack of access to this stuff is worse than the Holocaust, given the number of people who die from cancer. Now, I've had to work a lot on anger issues and trying to save the world because it wasn't good for myself.
That's right.
But I can certainly understand. I mean, I don't know that we're going to change it overnight, but, you know, it's so good to know that there are doctors like you and Dr. Geffen and Dr. Gordon and Larry Dossey and Bruce Lipton and all these people, Candace Pert, man, they are changing. They're the pioneers. They are going out there and changing the mindset, opening up the quantum world to help us to understand our physiology in a way of energy. It's so exciting. We really are at a turning point.
Well, I want to give you some hope, because hope is just around the corner, and you need to, you know, anybody who's angry.
I'm full of hope. I'm full of hope, yeah. But,
well, I mean,
yes.
More than just hope. This is actual action, okay? This is happening. I want to refer you to David Wilcox's website, which I think is, oh, God, I can't remember his website. But anyway, David Wilcox did an interview with, actually, let me just go to that interview. I can do that here. His website is Divine Cosmos, okay? And it's probably up on his website, but he did a recent interview with a kind of a whistleblower within the system that knows what's going on. And people just need to listen to that interview. That interview outlined something called the plan, which is now in action. And the plan essentially is going to take down the powers that be that have not only, created the financial crisis worldwide, but also the suppression of information about everything from free energy to alternative cancer treatments. Just an incredible clamp down on things that would threaten the pharmaceutical and or, you know, like for me, I wrote a book about the problems with breast implants, so that's another multinational company. These multinational corporations are probably above the governments and have more power and control. And then if you follow the thing on up, like in Thrive, if you watch Thrive, at the top are the few families that are controlling everything. Well, there's a plan to go to counter what is projected by the powers that be, and that plan is currently in progress. And so, it's not too much longer before these restrictions and, you know, every time a doctor tries to do things naturally, they end up before the medical board, that sort of thing.
Right.
Before all that just goes away. You know, that's just going
to
go away.
That's good to hear, because it's absolutely necessary.
It's quickly, too. It's not, you know, it's not like 20 years from now. So if you listen to that, you'll see why there's all sorts of hope. These plans.
Well, I have all sorts of new things to put on my website, don't I?
Yeah. Well, you know, we are in the dark, because unless you're tied into people like David Wilcox and other fairly brave souls who are out there with very important information, but not a lot of independent verification of that information, which makes them very prone to be attacked as conspiracy theorists. I actually was in the military for 13 years, so I also have all sorts of military connections that I can go to as well. So there's a tremendous amount of exciting stuff happening to reverse what has been hidden and to actually bring it forth and let people decide for themselves what they need to do based on, you know, something other than, well, we have three choices, you know, surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. Those were your three choices, you're an idiot because you're trying the holistic and natural treatments.
But, you know, the thing that I think we're really up against is people's own mindset. I have a lot of friends who are MDs. I live in a town mm-hmm. that has the biggest hospital between Denver and Salt Lake City. So there's a lot of doctors here, and I have some very dear friends who are docs, and they don't necessarily agree with everything I've written about or believe, but what they know is that 90% of the people come to them and want a magic bullet. They don't want to take responsibility for their own health, and that, to me, is is where the biggest change has to happen, is people have to go, you know what, I'm walking into this conveyor belt when you get a cancer diagnosis, and I am so terrified by the urgency and the energy of the doctors that are working with me that I won't even take, and it happened to me too, Susan. I mean, I had written books about alternative medicine. I was all about holistic living. I got this cancer diagnosis, and I was just about to jump right onto the belt when my dear husband took me aside and said, wait a second, don't you want to at least check into the alternatives?
Right.
It didn't even occur to me. It did not even occur to me. And I write about alternative treatment,
not to cancer,
but to other stuff. And I went, oh, yeah. So I called some doctors in Germany and, you know, did some due diligence, and they all said, go for the chemo and radiation because it has the best return.
Yeah,
and,
high
you know,
rate on that particular tumor, right.
Yeah.
But there's lots of tumors where, you know, like pancreatic cancer, where it doesn't have a good rate of, and you need to know that. I mean, you know, and you need to have a doctor that's willing to help you look at all of the alternatives, not just.
But that's pretty rare, and one of the things I really promote in my book is claiming your authority and taking your power back and saying, is this what I want to do? Do I want to check into other stuff? What is out there, and is it legitimate? How can I know if it's legit and not some snake oil? And I frankly think more of it's legit than not. I mean, there's so much good stuff out there, and what works for one person may not work for another, but that doesn't mean it's snake oil. And everybody has to walk this journey with a great deal of integrity to their own, answering to their own soul and their own spirit and their body, knowing that this is a really, you know, this is rocky terrain. This is new for a lot of people. You got to have courage up the yin-yang, and you're not necessarily going to have a lot of support from friends and family. I mean, when I became a raw foodist, all my doctor friends looked at me askance like I was crazy.
Oh, they do.
And,
they do, because they would never consider that. But actually, raw food, you explain it very well in your book, how it works. It provides things that the body needs to heal the cancer. You know, cancer is like a wound in the body, and you need to be able to heal it. So, you know, it's
extreme. But people have to step up and say, this is my life, this is my body. It's not just a magic bullet that's going to fix me. I gotta really look into this. And if they then decide, after doing their own homework, that they want to go with conventional treatment, great. But but walk into it with your own decision-making powers at play, because if you don't, you're just going to be a pawn in this big, fat world of the cancer culture, and it may or may not work for you. And, you know, there's a lot of complementary stuff, and there's also plenty of alternative stuff out there that is effective. So my biggest sort of soapbox moment is, don't just walk into a situation, close your eyes, muffle your ears, and go, just take me wherever you want, do whatever you want to me. You've got to go in alert, aware, and get as much support as you can in making the decisions that are right for you.
And if you don't know a lot about cancer, which most people don't, the actual biology of cancer, I want to recommend a book that I thought was great. It's John Boyk's book, Natural Compounds in Cancer Therapy. And he takes you through, I think it's the 9 stages that cancer goes through before it metastasizes. And and then how natural therapies. John Boyk is a traditional Chinese medical doctor who did research at MD Anderson. This
and how do you spell his last name?
B-O-I-K. I interviewed John on several occasions. The last time, he actually called me for an interview because he wanted to promote his new foundation, which is studying rainforest herbals right. in the treatment of cancer, which I think, you know, is great because that has not been done like John's doing it. He's
right.
actually a very, very a wonderfully intuitive and intelligent person who is
yeah.
looking at cancer from a scientific, you know, standpoint. And his book, I think it was 2001, it's called Natural Compounds in Cancer Therapy, Oregon Medical Press. And then he also wrote a book, Cancer and Natural Medicine, before that. I think it was before that, let me see.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to say here when that came out. But anyway, that will teach you about the basic science. The Cancer and Natural Medicine book was a textbook of basic science and clinical research. And then the other one is about how natural compounds cause problems for the cancer at each of the seven or nine steps that they go through before they metastasize. It
uh-huh.
just helped me understand cancer. I think you have to understand what's going on. It's
right.
not probably as simple as one thing. I think the fungus component is there, definitely. I think a lot of times when there's a lot of fungus in the tissues, there's definitely something called aflatoxins that can produce cancer, especially in the liver. I think that most cancers are contaminated with mold or
uh-huh.
fungus of some sort at some level. But I think it just like anything, I think it's a lot more complex than one thing. So
yes.
there's probably not going to be one thing that cures all cancer. How's that?
No, I totally agree, and that's why it's so great to have these innovative people. And okay, so let's also look at the reality, which, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist by nature, but I also have to admit to myself that if some brilliant human being came up with a pill that would cure all mm-hmm. cancers, we would have probably the biggest depression ever in this
mm-hmm.
country. There's so much money invested in all of these different cancers. And so that's just something to know. It's like, you know, there's a whole lot of people who are making a lot of really good money off of cancer. And, you know, one another
reason. Well, just look at Dr. Hammer. Look at what happened with Dr. Hammer. He had one of the highest cure rates of all because his theory is just brilliant.
Yes.
And they, you know, he was incarcerated.
Yeah, I know. It's
and that's not even in the U.S. That's in Europe.
No, yeah, that was in Germany.
So I would say that probably this clampdown on anything that is, you know, not going to make the pharmaceutical company's money is really, or the surgeon's money, you know, I mean, there's not just the radiation.
Or the radiologist
money.
Right, yeah.
is going to, there's a story, I don't know whether you know this story, there was an orthopedic doctor at Harvard who developed, by the name of Dr. Colley, and he developed toxins. He noticed that if any of his patients, after they operated on the sarcoma, got a bad strep infection, all their cancer went away, even the metastatic stuff.
Uh-uh.
So he developed Colley's toxins. That was developed about the same time as radiation was. Guess what won out?
Yeah.
You don't hear about Colley's toxins.
Mm-mm.
They had a tremendously, I mean, way more than radiation therapy for sarcoma. They had way more success clinically. His daughter or granddaughter put together the data, and it's really remarkable. But you can't make money off of Colley's toxins.
Wow.
And that came out of
yeah.
Harvard. So, yeah,
exactly.
It's been the same thing again and again and again. And you know what happened to Dr. Rife, you know? He didn't
talk about
not at all.
Destroying the evidence, man. That was what a
yeah.
sad story that is.
So the
yeah.
cure for cancer has been out there several times, or at least,
yeah.
you know, a cure for a lot of cancers. And
mm-hmm.
it's been not just suppressed, but the people that are doing it have been thrown in jail.
Well, one of the guys I have in my book is practicing down in Mexico now because he was actually a researcher for the pharmaceutical industry, and he
mm-hmm.
got colon cancer and, you know, basically went through a couple treatments and went, no, I'm done, and
yeah.
started sort of creating his own concoctions for his cancer and came through it beautifully. People started coming to him. They were all just natural plant-based stuff, and
mm-hmm.
eventually the Washington State Attorney General and some of the other
mm-hmm.
folks came after him. Long story short, he's now practicing in Mexico, but since my book came out, some guy down there is trying to smear him totally.
Sure.
And when you look up his name now on Google, it's just there's all this stuff. And
Well, that's how they attack you on the internet. The Quackbusters get you.
Yeah, so it's,
And in Mexico, there's a lot of competition because there's a lot of different cancer clinics. I interviewed Hulda Clark before she died, and she has a center in Mexico like they all do because they got kicked out of the U.S., but she actually came over to San Diego to do the interview, risking arrest because she had an active warrant out for her to do my show because she said the telephone lines weren't safe in Mexico. But she told me about the competition between the they're not. I mean, there's a lot of competition between the clinics too, and not all the clinics are good. I mean, some of the clinics are just mills to take your money,
right?
And give you a few, maybe some IV vitamin C and whatever, but that are good for you, but not really do all the work that's needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a complicated political issue as well as an economic issue and, of course, greatly an emotional issue that goes into the mix of all this. And that's, one of my favorite conversations about all this was sparked by Laura Alden Cam, who's an intuitive healer. She's in my book.
Yeah, I've interviewed her twice. I love her.
She is just a dream. I just love Laura. And she talks about the morphic field of cancer. And
yes,
it's there's a morphic, there's an energetic field for everything, but the morphic field for cancer, she said, the only other energetic field that compares in magnitude and power and stressors and money is the oil and gas industry.
That's right. That's why people who develop free energy devices have the same fate as people who develop cancer cures.
There you go. It's so true.
Country.
Yeah, and exactly. Well, they don't need to because they're whatever. So she talks about the, when you get that diagnosis, you're immediately sort of thrust into the morphic field of cancer, which is fear-based. Totally fear-based.
Totally.
And so that's part of why, it's just such a roller coaster ride for people because they just don't realize that it's not this death sentence that we've been led to believe, and it's not this curse that can't be turned around. And, of course there are cases where people do die. Of course there are. I mean, like the guy you were explaining earlier. But there's just there are so many different things that go into it, but that's not part of the morphic field. The morphic field says it's completely physical. We're completely helpless about getting it or getting rid of it, and therefore we just have to attack it. It's war-based. It's fear-based. It's completely dismantling the holistic sort of gestalt of what having a serious illness is about. And so anyway, she describes it beautifully in the book, including what cancer cells look like. She said that they're, and the characteristics of them, she said they're very dark and they're very rebellious. They're very angry. And they basically feel like they have been sort of kicked out of the realm of love. They don't, that's not exactly the way she put it, but if you're interested, check it out in my book, because she does talk about it so beautifully. And after I had my interview after I interviewed her for the book, I started looking inside of myself and saying, what's inside of me that feels like it has to attack me? What have I done to some part of myself that is so angry that it's ready to set these bombs off? And I found her. And it was amazing. It was an amazing, liberating thing to make contact with this part of myself that felt so neglected. And it was an important part of myself. It was my creative self, which is very important.
Which you had neglected for a while, huh? That's why
I had kids. I decided to grow up and get a job and have kids and get married, and all these other things took precedence, So we started this dialogue, this part of myself and me, and it took a while, but we reintegrated, and it was just because of Laura Alden Cam's perception. It was just this beautiful reconnection with a part of myself And she admitted it. She said, you bet I planted these bombs. You know, how else am I going to get your attention? I said, well, how about we write a book together?
I can be creative and you can settle down.
Yeah, exactly.
There's also a concept I want to bring out that I don't know if you mentioned your book, but something to consider. And in Europe, this is becoming more of an idea. This is like in the realm of ideas, okay? What about the idea that cancer can be a chronic illness, kind of like prostate cancer is? You know, that you can have cancer for a long time and die of something else. It's an interesting idea, you know, as you say, a morphic field of an idea. You know, what it does is it gradually replaces that idea that if you have cancer, you've got 6 weeks to live.
Yeah.
You know, which a lot of people, you know, even though their doctors tell them differently, they know that they're going to die of the cancer, so they die pretty quickly. I think in your book you mentioned one person that went into the hospital and then ended up dying in 4 days because
but that's because
he was told
his doctor,
he had a terminal illness by mistake. You know, by
well,
by
it,
one
it
of
wasn't
doctors.
By mistake. It was by a doctor who just was insensitive to the power of his words.
Right.
And he basically
exactly.
said, you know, you don't have much time left. And he was just a weekend doc. And then
in
walked, you know, the regular doc. The guy was dead. The family said, you know, he was
Wait
told.
A minute.
Yeah, so that's the nocebo effect. It's a very powerful, not so positive thing.
Yeah, Dr. Larry Dossey first described that. It's called medical hexing. It's not,
yes, exactly.
You know, believing
exactly.
what the doctor says, which is
but
which is not a good
I also
idea.
Think I love that idea of thinking of it as a chronic disease because it takes it ratchets down the negative impact so much. But then there's also this, and then there was a New York Times article written about this very thing. Cancer can disappear without doing anything. Just
right.
disappear. Okay. I mean, we all know that we have cancer cells running around us, you know, all the time. And what they discovered was that, you know, some people who were diagnosed with cancer who for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a controlled study or not, but they didn't do anything. They didn't pray, they didn't, you know, nothing. And the cancer was gone the next time. And this was consistent throughout these people that they studied.
I
think that happens. My gut tells me that happens. I mean, there are days when I was still dealing with all that, and I thought, you know, if I got tested today, I would have cancer. I can feel it because it's to me, I was able to track that it's really, really related to my fear.
Right.
And then there were days when I go, I don't think I wouldn't show up today. Nothing would show up today. Now maybe I'm a nut job, but I got to tell you, I think that there's something to that.
I think a lot of intuitive people, myself included, and I think you too, can feel when they have cancer. I know I have done the same thing. It basically is a perturbation or whatever you want to call it in your energy field that is kind of like a hole. You know, it's kind of like devoid of energy. It's more than anything else. And so I think you're right. I think that cancer can come and go. But, you know, the detection of it is also a problem. You know, PET scans only detect things that are like 4 millimeters and larger. And so, but surgery might detect cancer that's just, you know, microns. So, you know, the detection part is a problem. But I think just, I brought up the idea because I think we need to start replacing that morphic field of fear when cancer is... They did a study. The three things that generated the most fear were AIDS, cancer, and the IRS. Isn't that interesting?
Well,
I was
a friend of mine worked
the IRS
with
was first.
Oh, I don't know. I had an audit done a few years ago, and we had an accountant who was an ex-IRS auditor, and she taught us all the tricks. It's like, oh, okay.
There you go. You get around that too if you get the right help.
But I have a friend who works in AIDS stuff, and she said that AIDS is much more treatable, they think, than cancer these days. Really cancer. But I heard last night actually from a friend who read it in a book of many pages or in some intelligent resource, I don't know what, but she said that the number one concern to baby boomers now isn't cancer, it's dementia. So that's an interesting switch.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That is interesting. I never was worried about dementia, because if you've got dementia, you don't know what's going on. I mean, that's
exactly.
You know, and when you get
exactly.
far enough into it. Cancer, however, you're there till the bitter end, usually. You know, that's
yeah.
Much different.
Yeah.
But no, I do think that cancer, the diagnosis of cancer does start an emotional chain reaction that doesn't lead you to a good place. And I see it in my patients when, you know, their surgery comes back with cancer in places they didn't expect. You know, they thought that it was all gone and it, you know, it's still showing a little bit. I have to give the lecture all the time to people that, no, you know, you've had, this cancer was diagnosed back in 2008 and you're still alive with very little showing up on your PET scan. You know, you really are doing very well. And but so many of my patients feel that the ones especially that didn't do any chemo and radiation, that if anything shows up, that it's they're a failure, and that's just not true.
No,
the standard.
And in fact, when it's
person
when
would
it's
be dead doing nothing, you know, and so
yeah,
they're
I mean,
doing a lot.
When it's so small, when there's such small, tiny, itty bitty amounts of it, I mean, that's where I think the cancer industry goes crazy. They just want to hit it with all this poison and burning and all that stuff, and I think no, you know, when there's so little of it there, it could very well go away. It could very well just be, you know, one of those things where it showed up today and it wouldn't in a couple of weeks. I think that's you know, it's an important thing to weigh, and it does have to be, you know, sort of the patient's choice of, well, are we going to just start this whole thing again, this whole process of invasion with all these drugs and stuff, or are we going to just try something else, you know?
Well, your book is a wonderful compilation of all of the different things that people need to look at, the spiritual aspects, mental and emotional aspects, the doctors that are out there that are integrating all of this, as well as the patient's stories. And I do believe very strongly that cancer occurs because of a spiritual roadblock that you need to be aware and get around of in many cases, not in all, but in many.
Right.
And that accessing that information and then actually getting around it is very important to, you know, to not go down the path where you end up exiting. But I also believe, and I do this because I've treated cancer for, I don't know, over 30 years, that sometimes cancer is the way you go out on your death date. So I'd like to just throw out one more concept, is that for me, the most important thing to know when I treat a cancer patient is what is their death date. And this is, can be accessed through a number of different means, but it's usually clairvoyant. And although Deepak Chopra wrote about it in terms of the Rishi scrolls, the death date, the birth date is the first thing written on the scroll, and the death date's the last thing written. And these scrolls were written 5,000 years ago with the person's name on it. Deepak looked at his, including his death date, which is interesting. So obviously death dates are known, okay? And so some people choose cancer to go out with. That you need to know that. I mean, it is a way out. I mean, we all die of something. And some of us die quickly in accidents, and others die slowly with cancer because different lessons are learned with each of those.
Right.
So...
And some people really want to check out. I mean, that's another thing that I think we have to be very, very, very supportive of the person with cancer, because it may be that they're going to go on a journey and open up and learn all kinds of amazing things like I did, or it may be that they are really, really tired.
They're going back home.
Yeah. And,
and
you
they're
know,
luckier
you
than any of us.
Pardon me?
They're luckier than any of us. They get to go home.
Isn't that the truth?
Their assignment here.
Oh, my gosh. And so and so when people are like, no, you have to do this and this and this and this.
No,
and this,
no.
Like,
let them go.
Yeah. Let them go. Yeah. Sometimes they're just ready.
Make them comfortable.
That's,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's true. Yeah. And that's what that's why I told the story about my patient with esophageal cancer. He sat there and told his wife he was going to die. I mean, he knew he was going to die. And he was good with it. He was fine with it. So, you know, everybody's different. You can't put everybody in one of those things.
Everybody's
this is what
different.
Cancer
and,
is. So following your guidance, and your book is a wonderful example of people following our guidance, but also looking at why it's important to do that. So everybody's path is different, and the way out of cancer, if there is a way out, and one of the ways out is death. I do want, and I always talk to my patients mm-hmm. about that. That's mm-hmm. one way out.
Mm-hmm.
The way out for you, you need to access through your intuition, and don't
right.
think you're a success or failure. See, I don't believe
uh-huh.
that you either. You know, I don't believe that you can fail at this, because
mm-hmm.
every time you make the wrong step, there's a self-adjusting thing that puts you back on the path.
Right, and that's one of the number one feedback I get from people who have some criticism of it, if you will, is, well, basically, if you're telling people that they're responsible for their cancer, that you're blaming
mm-hmm.
them, and I'm like, boy,
no.
there's a big difference between blaming yourself and taking responsibility for your health
yeah.
and taking
right.
responsibility for where you want to go to get well. I mean, there's a huge,
yeah.
and there is no such thing as failure. I totally agree. It's like
yeah.
all we can do is our best within the context of what we know. And as people who love people with cancer, we just need to support people in the decisions that are right for them. And there is no blame. There is no blame. That's huge.
Right. And families can get in the way with this. They have preconceived ideas,
yeah.
and if you don't know what the family wants you to do, you can be ostracized emotionally.
Yeah.
Well, Lee, we are coming up to the end of the hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
I would love to give my contact information. Again, the book is Embrace, Release, Heal, An Empowering Guide to Talking About, Thinking About, and Treating Cancer. And you can find out more about it by going to my website at www.embrace.com. HealingCancer.com. The book is available. It's pretty widely available. You can get it on Amazon, of course, but there's a lot of independent bookstores who carry it, and you can always order it if they don't have it in the big chain stores. So we're coming upon the year anniversary, and the book is actually doing really well. So from the feedback I get, it helps a lot of people. So check it out.
Well, thanks, Lee, for coming on today.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you. Next week, we have Wynn Free on with The Nature of Positive Interdimensional Communication. On the 14th, Dr. Fatemi is talking about the episode of Life, Consciousness, Creation, and the Universe. On the 21st, Lynn Woodland, Making Miracles, Creating New Realities for Your Life and Our World. And the Noetic Science Meeting is on the 19th. Sandy Kudikas will be presenting Quest for Inner Consciousness. And Dr. Brad Gould will be talking about spring cleaning for the body on the 24th at Millennium Healthcare in Dunwoody at 7:30 p.m. on the 24th of April. I want to say a little bit about the I Can Do It retreat, which is in a few weeks here in Atlanta. It's a mind-body-soul event that's coming to Atlanta, San Jose, Vancouver, and Toronto. And it provides you with an opportunity to meet some of your favorite authors like Dr. Wayne Dyer, Greg Braden, Cheryl Richardson, Louise Hay, and Carolyn Mace. Go to icandoit.net for dates for a city near you, or call 1-800-654-5126. Again, we've been interviewing Lynn Fortson on a wonderful book, Embrace, Release, Heal, An Empowering Guide to Talking About, Thinking About, and Treating Cancer. It's a must-get book for any family dealing with cancer and or anybody who just wants to understand a little bit more about cancer. Lay, thank you very much for joining us. And this is Dr. Susan Kolb, and we will be back next week.